Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church in Minneapolis. We're on the web at www.cicministry.org. This is Todd Kramus, your host for the next half hour. I'm filling in for the vacationing Dick Cuffell. And once again, it's our pleasure to speak with Bob DeWay, pastor of Twin City Fellowship and author of Critical Issues Commentary. Well, Pastor Bob, today's topic, part two of something we discussed and started earlier, Global Warming, Blind Faith, and Global Delusion, a book review of Taken by Storm, The Troubled Science, Policy, and Politics of Global Warming.
Yes, and if someone wants to get this book, I just go to Amazon.com and search for it.
Authors Christopher Essex, Ross McKittrick, two Canadian professors.
Yes, and we were talking last week about the politics of this and the pagan worldview that drives it. The ideas that humans, just by living and breathing and going about normal life, are the big threat to the world that we live in.
Right. And if I recall, you made me feel bad about myself for producing all this.
Yeah.
This utility. But
yeah.
I've since forgiven you. We can go on.
Okay, good, Todd.
Sure. Now, what we wanted to talk about, T-Rex. Sounds like a horrible thing, Bob, a monster. What is it? What is
T-Rex? Well, the book that we're reviewing, by the way, uses some tongue-in-cheek and sarcasm. I love the book, okay? T-Rex is a term they made up.
Okay.
In fact, they have a chapter entitled T-Rex Devours the Planet.
Ooh.
So they start talking about, is there such a thing as a temperature of the Earth that could be taken and give it in a single number.
Similar to a human being, 98.6. That's
yeah.
The temperature of a human being.
Yeah. So they talk about that.
Hmm.
And they said that that is a myth because you cannot have a temperature of a system unless the system is in thermodynamic equilibrium.
What does that mean to us non-scientists?
Well, that means that within the system, there are no exchanges of temperature within it. It's all the same.
Okay.
Okay. There's no process going on whereby in one place within the system it has a certain temperature and another place it has a different one, and those are changing.
Mm-hmm.
So equilibrium means you're thermodynamically at equilibrium. You take the temperature, it's going to be the same throughout the system you're looking at.
All right.
Okay. And they pointed out you don't have that in a room. You can't. There isn't really a temperature in a room, okay? Because you can go, and anybody would know this, if you sat in any type of a room, that it might be warm in one spot, cooler in another. They said you can't take a glass of ice water and set it on in front of a fireplace, take the temperature of the ice water, take the temperature of the fireplace, average the two, and say, here's the average temperature.
That would be rather sloppy, wouldn't
you? Well, it wouldn't mean anything. It'd be meaningless.
Right.
The temperature in the glass ice water is one thing. The one in the fireplace is another.
Apples and oranges is
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah, and then if you took the temperature in that room 20 feet away, that'd be another matter altogether. So even in a given room, you do not have thermodynamic equilibrium. You have many temperatures, not a temperature. Okay, so you may have a thermometer on the wall that gives you an approximation of what's like in the room.
Right.
But even that isn't perfectly accurate if you ever sat under a draft or what have you. So, what they're pointing out is that taking so many thousand temperatures here and there around the planet and averaging them together isn't really giving you a meaningful figure.
They've been doing that since when? The 30s?
Well, the temperatures have been tracked for longer than that, but see, these statistics aren't a temperature. Let's just give an example. We live here in the Minneapolis area,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So they have the temperature at the airport. Now, if they were taking the temperature at the airport every day and every night for 20 years, which they assume they have been.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And you could say this. Over those 20 years, on July 9th, the average was this. Okay? So that average, whatever it was, let's say the average high was 82 or mm-hmm. whatever. What you have is not a temperature that was taken. It's a statistic. It's a statistic that says this is kind of what it's like in Minnesota. But it may not have been actually 82 for a high even once during those 20 years.
Right.
It might have been 95 and 72 and this and that and this and that. It's a meaningful statistic for us living here, because as long as the data collection was at the same place under the same conditions, it's at least meaningful about what it's like, and you could even see a trend whether it was up or down.
Right.
If you went over enough data. Now, here's something that most people don't know. That back in the 60s and 70s, there were something like, here it is. I'm going to just quote from my article here. The Global Historical Climatological Network that gathers data from stations that record local temperatures had between 12,000 and 15,000 locations from which to gain data between 1950 and 1970. Now, you need to remember, by the way, that most of these are in North America or Europe or in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the world, nobody's even taking the temperature or and preserving it over years.
Right. Why would they? It's what
well,
they would.
Yeah, you could go to a third world country and they don't know what the average was in their village. There's nobody taking the temperature and preserving it in documents and records.
So 15,000 locations between 1950 and 1970.
Yes. In 2000, there were less than 6,000 of those. We have less than half the data than we had even 20 years ago.
We're reading less than half of the data we were 20 years ago.
Right.
And we're making these pronouncements and all sorts of
based on less data that's not even this from the same locations. And much more of the data is from urban areas with the heat island effect.
Right.
Okay.
A city will hold heat in the winter and in the summer.
And so the temperatures at airports is kind of what's left after so many of the remote places have closed down.
Sure.
People aren't taking the data and recording the data. So we have less data to work with.
Well, these numbers you just read, I mean, it might lead a reasoning critical thinker to say, well, that's enough to know right there that something is up, something's amiss.
Exactly.
This global warming business.
Right. But nobody's telling you that. I suggest you read these guys' book. Now, they call this temperature. Now, we don't have a global temperature. We only have statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And the statistics are taken just from certain places, not everywhere on the globe, obviously. So this global temperature, which is a false entity that they call T-Rex, tongue-in-cheek, they call it T-Rex. It's the big T-Rex dinosaur that's going to devour the planet. And so we have data from airports and large cities, less data than we've had before. And in any situation like this, you have to terminate your process and start over if you have different data gathering methodology. Okay? You're not comparing apples to apples anymore.
No. Nope.
You can't compare the data that was gathered in 1950 from 15,000 locations to data gathered in 2007 from 6,000 locations.
Less than that, even.
Yeah, and in different locations than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So once the process changed, the study has to change. You have to start a different thing. But they don't do that. They take data that wasn't even taken from temperatures, the study of tree rings coring into the ocean floor, getting ice core samples.
From glaciers.
Yeah,
and
so they take all this data gathered in totally different ways to get numbers for hundreds of years ago where they actually weren't even taking temperatures necessarily, and then tacking it on to data gathered in some other way and creating this big chart and saying, see, here it is, global warming. And these guys say, this is absolutely unacceptable. This isn't even meaningful.
These two authors are responsible professors and scientists.
Well, you have to be able to think critically. You mentioned that a little bit earlier, Todd.
It's the most important.
Absolutely. These guys aren't right because they're two experts any more than the policymakers for the United Nations that are paid to come up with this official science are right because they're the experts. As a matter of fact, as we saw on that DVD we talked about last week,
right,
there are thousands of people that could be asked about this, and at least half of them don't believe that we know that there's any global warming going to happen in the future or whether it's even happening now. Okay, but I've read a book written by two guys. What makes them right and everybody else wrong? How can I decide that? Well, I'll tell you how I decided it. Based on critical thinking about what is rational and what makes sense. I didn't read just one side of it. I read Al Gore's book in careful detail, Earth in a Balance. And reading it, I could see what's wrong with it by using critical thinking.
Uh-huh.
What did I see was wrong? Well, his claim that all of reality is like a little hologram and each little piece looks like the whole, and that's all God within everything. So I know he's a neo-pagan. So I know he's wrong in his worldview based on what I know from the Bible. And then what he's talking about as far as the science of all this stuff, he's still going around using a hockey stick that's already been debunked. Now, I don't have to be a scientist to know using debunked data makes somebody not credible.
Credible.
Exactly. Okay, so why do I think these two guys are credible? Because I know what they're saying is true based on not my knowledge of climatology, but my knowledge of how differential equations work and how complex systems work, because I studied that in chemical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have too many variables, too many inputs, and variables that may change and influence one another, you create a level of complexity that is impossible for anybody to analyze and put a handle on. And they're just saying that. They're saying this is impossible to know. And they even quote from the footnotes of these big UN documents where they're in lingo that non-scientists don't understand,
mm-hmm.
that when you have these differential equations that are linked, that influence one another in all these variables, you can't know. You can't even make a theory out of it.
Well, you couldn't possibly.
Okay, now let me just read a little section from their book. It's a little longer quote, but let me just read this and show you why I believe that these guys are credible.
Okay.
Now, they're just talking about all the data that gets thrown out when people are trying to figure out future climate,
mm-hmm.
and all of the variables that are influential in what makes up what we call climate. So let me quote.
Okay.
Quote, this is from page 95, taken by storm. We can talk about how the oceans interact with the land, the exotic thermodynamic properties of ice compared to other solids that make it possible to skate and ski, and also for glaciers to flow, making them the subject of wonderful mystery and unpredictability. We could talk about the land-surface-air interactions and how we not only have to think about flow over land of different heights, but around buildings, through forests, past every leaf. We could talk about the ever-so-important first kilometer of air above the ground and ocean, and all the rich chemistry that goes on in the air and the ground, the gases emitted by the soil and volcanoes, the gases absorbed and lost, the chemicals that rain cleans out of the air, the fluid-solid interactions of river, and we haven't even arrived at butterflies or seagulls or the family dog, for that matter. There's just incredible complexity. So using critical thinking, all right, when you have almost infinite number of possible variables, all of which could influence climate, it's obvious to me that the little bit of CO2, which the amount contributed by humans compared to all the CO2 that comes and goes through processes that are already here, which, depending on whose number you're looking at, the people that believe in global warming will say it's 17%. The people that don't say it's 3% or 5%. But whatever the case, carbon dioxide is only one tiny little bit.
Minuscule.
Of this, yeah, minuscule part of this whole picture. Well, I can understand that. Yeah, I studied math science, but I'm a theologian, not a scientist. But I understand how you do critical thinking. And I also realize how you're deceived when you don't do critical thinking.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Critical thinking, what a concept.
Well,
it is everything in these days of deception.
Yeah.
I believe critical thinking as a practice with most human beings in America.
Yeah.
I've decided to let someone else do my thinking. I'll get behind Al Gore because I like Al Gore and I think I'll agree with him. I'm going to join the majority on this because I don't want to be one of those people out on the fringe.
Yeah, well, it's the failure to think about all the things you need to know to reach a rational decision on an important topic.
I'm no genius, but I know enough to know to look at all sides of an issue. Critical thinking.
That's true
for
anything.
Question what you hear.
Yeah, let me give you an example, all right? Just today in the paper, Minneapolis Star and Tribune,
mm-hmm.
there was an article about a guy who claimed to be an apostle who had bilked people out of millions of dollars. and he's going on trial.
How about that?
Okay. Now, how did he bilk all these people out of millions of dollars? Well, he and this guy above him had a Ponzi scheme going where you tell people they can make unbelievable, you know, they were promising 6% a month at a time when you can't even get 3% a year. It's trying to save your money.
Sounds
right?
Like a heck of a deal.
Yeah. Okay. So what they do is they'd get people to sign up, and then the first few that do, they'd actually pay out that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people tell their friends, look at this. Here's my check. Here's the money I got. Okay. And then they get a huge pyramid going, and these guys are bilking people from millions. They were cashing in their life insurance policies, putting second mortgages on their homes, taking anything they get a hands on and giving it to this apostle.
Yikes.
And he runs off with their money. They're broke. And now the guy's probably going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, what is going on is a lack of critical thinking.
People saw the promised land, an easy buck.
Yeah, they're making their decisions by non-rational means. That's what I mean.
Well, what they felt, it made them feel good.
Well, they don't stop and think that we're living in an economy where you put your money in the money market right now, you can't even get 3% interest. These guys got some process that it's going to yield 8% a month.
I've not read the story, but was there name it, claim it behind it? Was that sort of theology behind it?
Well, because the guy called himself an apostle, he obviously claims he's speaking for God.
That's what I want to get at. Did folks understand that? I mean, well, it's a Christian thing.
Yeah,
Why would he rip me off?
The Christians are the ones that get ripped off, and I've heard about this I don't know how many times in my lifetime, where whole churches are ripped off by a Ponzi scheme because they're not using critical thinking. They're going on blind faith, all right? I don't ask anybody to go on blind faith, and when I preach the gospel, I don't ask them to have blind faith. I tell people that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead before credible witnesses, and I believe in apologetics, and I believe in evidence. You should look. Is there any reason to believe the Christian claim? Okay? But when people are selling blind faith, they're telling you to shut off your critical thinking capabilities.
Right.
All right? So believe this. Why? Because, this is really important. If you keep driving your pickup truck, we're going to have catastrophes that the world has never known, and you're going to be contributing to it because you drove your pickup truck to work.
You'll leave your children with a world similar to what we'd find in the Mad Max series of movies. Post-apocalyptic.
Everything's
wasteland.
Going to be terrible. Yeah, because humans are going about doing what humans do, which is make carbon dioxide. So this critical thinking is how you can read several books from different perspectives and come to the conclusion of who's telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Essex and McKendrick aren't telling me they know what the climate's going to be 10 years from now. They're telling me they don't know, and neither does anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Using critical thinking, that's a believable claim because I can understand how complex climate is.
Really, what you need to understand is that very fact, how unbelievably complex it is, and there is no simple answer.
Yes.
Sorry, Al, there is no simple answer.
Exactly. The sun could start spewing out more sunspots and flares that send more heat our way.
Right.
There could be more dissolved particles floating around in the air, reflecting heat away from the earth. There could be more water vapor, which we got to talk about, which keeps heat. There's all kinds of things going on, including ocean currents, airflow across land, and all the stuff they're talking about. So two guys tell me, here's all the variables, which we know to be variables. We can't put this all together and predict the climate. And you can't take one small variable, CO2, mm-hmm. and make it the whole. That's credible. Global warming, based on humans going about doing what they do, is not credible. And I don't believe it. And I think it's the biggest scam since the Ponzi chain letter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about you. What I read on the web, I see a lot of science articles from the BBC and newspapers and dailies from across the globe. They're telling us, and NASA and science has discovered this, the temperature on Mars also is increasing.
Well, yeah, because they could see that the CO2, there's a frozen
There's an ice cap, a giant ice cap.
It's not water, though.
No.
But it's shrinking. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a billboard. I mentioned this in my article. We were driving back.
Oh, that's
from,
right.
Yeah, we were driving back from up north. And here's this billboard. It says, the ice caps on Mars are shrinking. Are humans causing it? And then it was advertising their website. And in their book, they mention a fact that there was some scientist somewhere that wrote an article in a journal using the fact that the ice caps on Mars are shrinking to suggest that changes in the sun's output of energy is a bigger factor, if there is indeed global warming, than anything else that's going on.
Certainly.
And the other people that interacted with these ideas called him a contrarian. They won't even take him seriously. In other words, if you don't come to the table already believing in global warming, then any evidence that you cite, we're just going to laugh away, and we're going to say you're one of these skeptics, or you're just a contrarian.
You're uninformed, and you don't
know. In other words, we're not even going to interact with the idea, well, why are the ice caps on Mars shrinking? It's certainly not because we're making CO2 on Earth.
Could our CO2 be wafting its way through space to Mars?
Maybe if one of those probes carried some with it
maybe
and dropped it off.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe there's a conspiracy.
Well,
I don't know.
The point is, dear ones, when are we going to start thinking? Now, people might be saying, well, this is not a spiritual issue. Yes, it is a spiritual issue. If we're willing to believe what we're being told to believe by the world out there in order to get us to let down our national identity, because this is a global problem, we're going to have a global solution.
And a global tax.
Every nation has to come under some authority to tell them to quit using hydrocarbons. We're allowing ourselves to be set up for the one world government that the Bible predicts, and we're not thinking. And these Christian leaders that sign these global warming documents are showing themselves to be untrustworthy as leaders. Why? Because they're not using critical thinking, and if they're not using it about this, they're probably not using it about the Bible either.
Right. In what other ways will they be deceived?
They're deceived because they feel like they got to jump on the global bandwagon. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to think for themselves. They're not willing to speak up. I'm not embarrassed to go against the whole world on this because I know that no one on the face of the earth knows what the climate's going to be like 10 years from now. Nor does anyone know for certainty that carbon dioxide levels that may be higher than they would be if we weren't on the earth are going to cause global catastrophe.
We've been discussing Mars and all sorts of different variables and causes of this so-called global warming. Everyone's familiar with the term greenhouse gas. And oh, the greenhouse effect. Bob, you've got to save us from this greenhouse gas.
That's what our authors, Essex and McKittrick, call a lying metaphor. In other words, when people don't want to think, you just give them a metaphor. So in other words, if you have to do all this study to figure out how climate works, that might give me a headache. So we'll just say greenhouse. You know what a greenhouse is like.
I can associate with that. Yeah. I've been in them.
Yeah.
Hot in there.
So, it's a greenhouse effect. Well, what I love about this book is they totally debunk that. The greenhouse metaphor is a lying metaphor on two major levels.
Let's hear them.
Two major levels. Number one, greenhouses are not warm because they did something to change infrared radiated energy. Let me back up here and explain what that is. There's two ways that energy is exchanged coming in and coming out from the Earth.
Okay.
One is through fluid dynamics, and the other is through infrared radiation. Now, CO2 is a gas that will affect infrared radiation, and there's other ones that do. CO2 is not even the most important one. Well over 95% of the gas that holds infrared radiative energy is water vapor.
Water vapor.
Water vapor. Water vapor is just way, way more important than carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even talk about that. Now, let's talk about greenhouses, right?
Sure.
So you have fluid dynamics, which is the turbulence and the movement of energy through a system through turbulence.
Okay.
And you have infrared radiation. Now, the greenhouse shuts off one of those two. But what it shuts off is the fluid dynamic exchange of energy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're putting up a physical barrier that keeps the fluid dynamics within and not getting out.
No escape.
No escape. But infrared radiated energy could still escape from a greenhouse or come in and go out. So that's not the dynamic of it. So you don't create the greenhouse by having carbon dioxide in it. That's not what makes it work. It's the physical barrier of the plastic or the glass or whatever to cut off the fluid flow of energy. Let me quote our authors. A greenhouse acts like the picture on the bottom. They show this in a graphic. Someone comes and shuts off the fluid dynamical energy drain from the surface by putting something up like glass or plastic that the inbound solar radiation can pass through, but air cannot. It doesn't matter what the material is. The effect is quite pronounced. The explanation is both theoretically and experimentally certain. So it's predictable. You can create a greenhouse. It'll work. Now, is CO2 a greenhouse gas? Well, here's the interesting thing. The problem the greenhouses have is they start having a lack of CO2. And the reason for that is plants use CO2 and take it out of the air and put oxygen in.
Right.
So you have a greenhouse that's full of plants, and the dynamic energy drain is cut off by the glass.
Sure, a barrier.
Okay. So the CO2 is getting drawn out of the atmosphere, and it gets to low levels, and the greenhouse starts underperforming. The things don't grow well in it. So in order to enhance the effectiveness of a greenhouse, they have to often create a source of carbon dioxide, like burning a propane or something, and dumping the exhaust in there to get more CO2 into the greenhouse.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so greenhouses are known for a lack of CO2. So CO2 is not a greenhouse gas, okay? And the fact that CO2 is an infrared-absorbing gas is not what makes a greenhouse work. Because it wouldn't work because they tend to lack CO2. So the whole thing is bunkum.
Bogus.
It's bogus. There's no greenhouse effect. And CO2 is not a greenhouse gas. And the only way the Earth could warm via greenhouse is you somehow would have to put a barrier around the Earth to stop the fluid dynamic drain of energy. You're going to put the Earth in a big plastic bubble. Maybe you could do that. No.
Well.
So why do they keep talking about greenhouse? Well, because they want to give you some simple thing that you can relate to,
everyone identifies with the problem.
Even though it has absolutely nothing to do with what they claim they're afraid is going to happen, which isn't probably happening anyhow. So there are so many complexities to this, and the greenhouse metaphor is just trying to make something complex, simple, and sell an idea to the public who are unsuspecting and unable to critically examine the facts for themselves because they haven't been trained.
It's a bill of goods, but who's going to be the wiser?
Yeah. And people are so convinced of this lie that they're willing to impoverish themselves because they think they're doing something noble. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Dear Christians, don't allow yourself to be deceived. And next week, we're going to talk about just how much CO2 humans contribute. We're going to talk about the difference between nescience, it's a new word for some people, and uncertainty. And we're going to answer the questions we raised in the very first program about the doctrine of certainty. We're going to answer each one of those questions. We're going to take all 9 questions, and we'll answer them one by one based on what we've learned, what we've been discussing. But for now, we would say if somebody is trying to sell you a bill of goods, buyer beware. We're not saying we know the Earth is going to cool in the future. We're not saying we know that your Earth is going to warm in the future. We're saying nobody knows the future climate of planet Earth because it's not really something that we can predict.
Well said. Exactly. Well, I think that's it for today, Bob. Thank you for joining us, everyone. And remember, if anyone would like to visit our church or contact us, remember it's Twin City Fellowship located in Minneapolis. Our phone number is 952-935-3100. Again, 952-935-3100. And we are on the web at www.cicministry.org. For Critical Issues Commentary, this is Todd Kramus.
And Bob DeWay.
And thank you, everybody. We'll talk again soon.